Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In general, the reason why people continue to read, why there are people who come to our channels to learn about books and to find recommendations, is because it feels like there is a deep shallowness to everything in our culture. Everything is so transient and empty. Comedy is cowardly on every front.
It is.
I hate this whole thing where journalists are like, comedians are so brave, you know, and they're speaking the truth. Like, comedy is cowardly.
Welcome everyone to the Tootin' Around Podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we got an actual guest on this show. It's not just two guys. Ooh. It's three guys. We're welcoming Jake from Man Carrying Things. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for forcing me to do this.
It took
a lot of convincing, a little bit of blackmail, but at the end of the day, we're all here.
Now, Man Carrying Thing, Jake, we're going to refer to him as Jake. You guys see him online differently, but he's going to carry this podcast for us. He doesn't do a lot of podcasts. We're going to see you outside your element of your 30-second, one-minute form content. See if you can if you can handle this.
Does this angle work for you guys?
That's perfect. Now,
I think they need to, the camera needs to lower a little bit. I think they still need to see the nose hairs. That's an important camera angle. There we go. Perfect.
You do that angle a lot in your videos too. It's so intimate. Oh,
now, nobody Jake, wants to see that.
Jake, you're so out of your, how do you feel being on a podcast right now? This has got to be weird.
I feel sick to my stomach. I don't know what I'm adding to society or the culture here, but I'm excited to go on this ride for you guys to guide me. I feel like I'm in prestigious company among all the great people you have on here, and I feel like I'm dragging down the podcast a little bit, and I'm feel bad, but I'm okay with that.
I'm glad you feel okay with your place. It's good. It's good for people to accept their place in the hierarchy.
The tough thing too, we're starting this podcast off with a couple of things. We're going to ramble off, but the two big topics today are talking both our channels. People kind of come for some comedy, some fun, some levity. And so that's one thing to talk about is how we function on YouTube as having a comedic channel, but also deep take analysis where you have like an hour deep dive on Wheel of Time seasons, and you're an actual booktuber. You don't just have 30-second, 1-minute form content. You sometimes just pop out a video that's a half hour long talking about, you know, our place in the universe. So how do you, Jake, I mean, now that we can talk to you for a bit here and start to deep dive into your brain, how do you manage to both be funny and make hilarious content, but also try to make people take you seriously at the same time?
Where do I even start? That's such a multifaceted, deep question. I feel like I'm on Charlie Rose right now. But I think what I like with doing the long form stuff is I love when I make the short skits, all the analytics go like this, go like that, and all the viewers are happy. And then the second I make a long video, it's like, boom. And I love that challenge, you know? I love the struggle. And so sometimes I just got to throw a curveball in there occasionally. But I think to do this stuff and to talk about books at all in any capacity on the internet, you have to have kind of just a love of the game. You really got to be passionate about it. And that's what I spend all my time reading. I just read all day, every day. I write. I'm immersed in that world. So, you know, when I have something to talk about, it's usually about books.
Rich, we can attest with that algorithm. Like, having a podcast isn't the most advantageous, YouTube friendly, you'd say, right?
No. And then you take that a step further of like, oh, you're going to do book content? Oh, yeah. Oh, that's going to go well for views.
Mm-hmm. And it does sometimes. I mean, there's people like who have really found success on YouTube with book stuff. Maybe not people like Daniel Green, but, you know, other people who have found a fantastic success. And I think because there is a sense of wanting to return to like middle school when you have to talk about books in class. I feel like that's what it comes down to in a lot of ways. And a lot of people are just learning about the world through YouTube, sadly. And, you know, any kind of like little tidbits of culture and learning is just like, oh, it's a wealth of knowledge. It's great.
Do you feel like you have, with your platform now, a lot of influence on what books people will read? Or even when you talk, when you get funny about, you don't just do books. You will go into hot topics, things that are like Mr. Beast. There's a bunch of people hating on Mr. Beast right now and a lot of bad things. I don't know the details of it, but then you'll make a Mr. Beast thing just talking about the trend and poking fun at whatever the new thing is. So you don't just keep it to books. So when you poke fun at other things, do you think you have actual influence on like, oh, that's funny, I agree with that. Like humor is a good tool in a way. You have power.
Oh, yeah. A great political manipulator, Jake, man carrying things.
Yes. You know, Paul, is your name Paul Tritt? I don't know.
I feel like you guys are insinuating that I manipulated elections or something in the past. Like, what are you guys saying here?
In the past, possibly in the future, you know.
It didn't.
I mean, if you did it once, you could do it again.
We have so much dirt on you. You like the blackmail we had to get you on this pod. You have skeletons, Jake.
Several. Precisely two, actually.
Oh.
And yeah, I won't name them, but.
It's amazing what foreign powers will pay for short 30-second videos that will help their political rivals. Mm. It's amazing.
But what do you think about this power? I mean, you're obviously like, genuinely, so many of your videos make me like cry laughing at the end of them because you have such you've mastered the skit game completely, obviously, with your success. And I'll find whether you have like a political thing or just a trendy thing or a book thing. It's you don't see channels like yours where you're talking about Stormlight Archive and then Mr. Beast. It's just, it's an odd combination and it works. Why does it work? Why?
I feel like it's a clashing thing. I mean, to me, it's just like, it's just my personality. So yeah. I'm like following the stuff. I'm deeply online, too much online. So, you know, when I'm not like just reading Blood Meridian or whatever, then I'm online learning about Mr. Beast and his war crimes. And you know, that's just kind of ends up coming to the channel because I'm like, I'm a very, very, very strict person about getting the work done, you know? So for like 3 years now, I've been putting out 3 videos a week on the main channel. So I got to make it about something. I got to figure out something that's going to sell, you know? So I guess that's what it comes down to. I mean, I never think about influencing anything with any take that I might have. In fact, I feel like it's all just me gathering all the influences that I see and am immersed with and try to put it out there, you know, in kind of like a comment. I don't know.
How did you start then? Because now you have a content kind of all over the place of nice hour-long breakdowns of Wheel of Time and why this show, season one, at least sucked. And then you also have 30-second videos on you know, Madam Web. Just how did you start with the idea of going down the comedy route of short 30-second sketches, couple minute sketches, or did you want to be more of a video essayist, or how did it start?
I think the longer you do, if you're just doing YouTube, you end up finding the route that you need to take. You know, like I started out thinking, okay, I'm going to be like Daniel Green. I'm going to make like BookTube content, you know, once a week. I'm going to review the Stormlight Archive. I'm going to keep up with everything. I could not do that. I do not have the capacity. I don't have the willpower to grind through books and to create that kind of content. And so I just started doing stuff that I could with my time. You know, I started the channel when I was in college. I was going to UCLA, English major, reading a bunch there. So I was like, I don't have time for this shit. I'm just going to make some short videos. And that was just more fun. So I did love that kind of like short form comedy. And the fact that I can continue doing that and that people like that made me really happy, because I'm like, I'd much rather be making stupid shit than serious stuff. You know, I have videos where I'm talking about the writing style of Frank Herbert, and I can't watch that. I can't rewatch any of those. I can't rewatch any serious videos I've ever made. But all the skits, I can watch them. I can live with them and go, okay, that's kind of fun and stupid because not taking myself too seriously. And I think if there's anything I want people to maybe get out of like the full breadth of the channel and the stuff that I'm making is that the like the high and the low can just coexist. There doesn't need to be this delineation between deep dives about literature and, you know, short comedy.
Do you think the content kind of just speaks on its own, or do you find a weird clash where people know you for the comedy section so they don't take you as seriously with your more serious content, or vice versa type deal? Is there any kind of conflict you feel people throw your way?
Yeah, and being able talking about it at all is very weird. So like this, I'm very uncomfortable right now.
Good, good job, Rich. This. Yeah, yeah.
Because I never have to talk about this. I don't talk to anyone in my daily life. I mean, for the most part.
You have a wife, is that correct?
Yeah, but she has fun in the basement. Right. You know, I don't think about it too much. But, you know, just talking about this is kind of weird because that kind of, I don't think about it that way. It's just like I'm putting out videos and it's, you know, whatever's there. And I think that people like that because they just like personality. They like people like the old school YouTube vibes of just like doing whatever you want. And I was deliberate starting out the channel being like, I want it to not be stuck into one zone. I was like, I want it to get to a point where I could just make a variety of different stuff and people will be kind of on board. And I feel like I'm still getting to that point, but I feel like I'm working towards that. And that's, am I answering the question? I feel like I'm rambling.
That's good. You're in the right place.
Yes.
Yeah. We named the channel appropriately.
We also named it because to give us some wiggle room on, hey, we didn't know at first if we were going to do movies or books or just be like stories. So we started with movies and TV and books and then kind of niched down, found our thing over.
That's
over
very smart. Yeah. That's super smart. I think you guys are doing it a great thing because after niching down, then you can niche out and do all sorts of stuff because now you have a bunch of people, 30,000, congrats, by the way, who...
Is one of them you? Are you a subscriber?
I think, yeah.
Okay, I was going to rip... at some point at this, I'm going to rip off the thing on my head and it's not yet. You haven't angered me yet. It's okay.
Why would I want to anger you? You're a nice person.
Oh, thanks.
Well, thanks. Nice people can do terrible things.
That's true.
Don't count it out.
But you, with our channel, we niche down, could niche out again. That's a good point because with, I guess the only limitation we put ourselves in is we do long form. Like we do hour long minimum. Sorry, you're going to have to stick here. You got another 50 minutes on the clock. Sorry, buddy. But we usually do that long form content. But that's kind of what we stuck ourselves to, which is a little easier for us because the two people. You see on a lot of BookTube channels, a lot is one person talking to camera. I mean, like you have there, but the unique angle you have is obviously that short form. But kind of the pivot into this point, Jake, a big question I've had, I wanted to prep for this episode, is we all started having fun. We're saying, hey, we're following our passions, our joy. We're just posting about books. At a certain point, you know, we're the audience. We're talking about things. At a certain point, do you feel like you're sometimes the person that you can make fun of in the videos? Like, do you still feel of yourself as that viewer, that reader, but now as you have so many views and a subscriber base, but also just have obviously a lot of knowledge on books and present deep dives as well. Do you feel like you're trending into the elite? Are you getting too pretentious or out of your bowels here? Because I'm not trying to project at all, I promise. But Jake, how do you feel about, are you still the common man that you reach to be, or are you Jake the elite shill?
I just want to clarify. Just add context. Austin here would consider himself a cinephile.
I dove into your Letterboxd account. He has a Letterboxd account. I looked at every film, was like, good. He has good takes. He has really good takes. Jake, I love your Letterboxd. Go check out Jake's Letterboxd and his channel. But Jake, I'm an absolute cinephile. I'm a geek.
Translation for that, he's a pretentious prick when it comes to movies.
Yeah, I love him. Yeah. So
you and I are the same. I didn't know you were going towards the elitist shill towards like cinema because I was like, what? But yeah, I mean, the cinema, I'm with you. I'm a huge film snob. I gotta be real with that. And I think it comes out in my videos occasionally with like the certain references I make. But I mean, I wanted to be like a director, you know, all throughout high school, and I was making movies and all that sort of stuff. And not so much now because that requires a lot of work, but you know, that was like, I was just watching a ton of movies all the time. All I did was watch movies. So that's why there's so many on the Letterbox. I don't watch as many movies now because, you know, I have a family or whatever, which is annoying, but, yeah, I think in terms of being an elitist shill, I am a part of the elite. I mean, once you get, and you guys will experience this, once you pass 100,000 subscribers, people treat you different, you know? Mm. They give you more respect. It's like this, I don't know, I feel like I could just like push people out of my way when I go, you know, on the train. I'm just shoving people around. It feels good, and I don't feel bad about it.
You get to cut the line while showing your YouTube channel to people, just like, get out of the way.
I have shirts with my subscriber count, you know, on the back, and that
there you go.
That keeps me humble, I think, because reasons. I don't know.
Do you get a plaque at 100? Is it, or do you have one?
Yeah.
Oh, now I am jealous. Now that got me. That's pretty cool.
You guys are gonna get there. I know you guys will, but it's fun to get that and. But nothing changes because you're just alone making videos the same as ever. And scary enough, I mean, as much as like you feel like once you get an amount of subscribers, it really doesn't come down to that because you see so many channels with millions of subscribers and they're getting 12 views on a video, you know. It just depends on how you're carrying the momentum, on how you're communicating with your audience. And that's just such a fluid thing. And I think that's why so many YouTubers are just full of anxiety and they're workaholics and they're grinding constantly because there's no guarantee about anything, you know? Tomorrow, my audience might be like, well, that guy sucks. Why should I watch his videos, you know?
It is a brutal game. Nothing is kind of given to you on that. So like, notice with... So when our channel is roughly like 30,000-something subscribers, but... probably about half of those comes from shorts. And so when you see our long form videos, definitely doesn't perform as well as something you would think. Oh, 30,000 subscribers, you'd think they'd have X amount of thousands of views. No, because if you were to take shorts away, we're closer to like 15,000 subscribers. But that anxiety of, you know, we do a video on
Dungeon Crawler,
those do Carl, horrible. book four, book five, which we love, but you know, no one's going to watch that one, but everyone's going to watch our Gardens of the Moon video or talking about the current thing with Neil Gaiman. Like, of course, those will do well.
And with you had a recent skit exactly on this, Jake, where you had, it was something about, you know, YouTube recommends you a 5-viewer channel. And as you're scrolling on there and you see the 5-viewer channel, you click on it and it's this YouTuber, you kind of made fun of how the YouTuber can be like their authentic self. Like, hey guys, I'm my authentic self. And then the person watching the video just like goes right straight to a Mr. Beast video because, you know, on the one hand, can you be more authentic? You know, when you're just starting on YouTube. I went back to your first video, even researching this, and your hair changed. That was your channel is a good
change.
Is a very good kind of thing just to see your hairstyle throughout the years. Like we are basic. I can't see mine right now, but we've stayed fairly consistent, I think.
I grew hair. I started bald.
Yes, that's right.
I now have hair. So yeah, but I went from bald to balding. That's a big change.
But you could see with, yeah, I'll ask that later too, but with your first video, looking back, you talked about, unless you had earlier ones that you just, that, but your earliest one here is Words of Radiance. You were looking at just being book nerdy, like all of us, talking about Words of Radiance and comparing that, saying it was better than Way of Kings, which agreed. I think it's definitely a step up.
Also, you said like the most important scene and it wasn't the duel. And I was like,
I don't even
disregard
opinion. I can't watch that video. I haven't seen it in so long.
But it's so interesting to see how you change throughout time. At least online, you get kind of more comfortable on camera too. Is it changing your personality? I don't think that you might have changed. Just maybe you become more comfortable and like, hey, it doesn't matter as much. I can just be. Can you be our authentic self even with this many viewers? Essentially, do you still feel like you haven't changed so much? It's still I'm still Jake.
Man, these are deep questions. Jeez.
I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
I ask myself these every time.
We got used to Ken Liu. Ken Liu came on and ruined us. We're now just, we're expecting a higher quality of conversation now.
I know. I don't know what you guys expect me to bring to the concept of.
Ask the funny guy something
come
deep.
Come on, YouTube funny man.
Dance.
The fundamental changeability of human nature. I mean, early on you are, and you guys probably know this too, you're just more stiff in front of the camera. You don't really know how you're coming across. I definitely cringe when I look at myself in early recordings because I was like trying to put on this performance or whatever. And in a way, it is still a performance, but you're just more comfortable and you realize like the numbers don't get in your head. I mean, I was always way more self-conscious with 10 viewers on a video than I am with 100,000 just because ultimately, it doesn't make much of a difference to my physical reality. I'm still sitting here in my room. It's just a number that's bigger. There's some more comments, but I don't know. I guess you just become numb to it. It's the same thing like editing yourself in videos. Oh, you know, man. When you first start doing it, it's annoying as hell. It's unbearable. But now when I edit myself, I'm just like looking at an actor or something.
Well, we've talked to a couple different BookTubers and talking about mainly comments and how comments can actually affect them. And that's one of the more stressful things for YouTube. Would you say the same thing or do you not really find comments to affect you anyway?
I don't know. All the comments I get are plankton farts and dyes and all, you know, I carry that. I'll carry your thing, man. Like it's just all dumb shit. Like it's just all memes. So it's, most of the comments I get now are just jokes, except on the book videos when people will be like, wow, I discovered you through the memes, but now I'm reading Blood Meridian. Thank you for that. And I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. That's so nice. And then the next comment is just like, what the fuck is a book? You know, it's so it's like it's a great mixture. And I feel like that keeps me sane. I thankfully, I don't get too many crazy comments. Yeah, I used to like when I was talking about serious topics like the Wheel of Time, because people get passionate about that. They'll want to kill you over something you say about the Wheel of Time or Stormlight Archive. But, you know, now it's not such a big deal. I mean, I'm sure you guys get more vitriol just because you're talking about people's passions in a serious way.
Surprisingly, we've coasted pretty well. Like we don't get too many nasty comments in general.
Most of them are probably from me, right?
Well, there's a couple. We have you automatically like blocked on those comments. YouTube has a great filter, by the way. You can really filter comments by individual. It's pretty great. You just search name, ban them. It's great.
Yeah, with our comments, we get more of that on the short form, right? Because
short form. Oh, there's a lot of hate there. Oh. Oof, they don't like us there,
but
very often.
A lot of times the shorts that do well are more controversial takes, like where I'm like, hey, Red Rising's better than Dune, which it is, but see that could be
incorrect.
Taken. That could be taken, and then that's where...
See, this is the problem with you doing being in charge of editing is you're allowing stuff like that to go on our channel, and I don't agree, and that hurts my image.
Like Jake, I do know like you love Dune, obviously, and you had one of those top 10 videos of you going over some of your favorite books, and again, that juxtaposition where you have the short, funnier videos, then you do your longer videos, and it's completely serious. Like, hey, I love books. Here's some of my favorites. This is why it's my favorite. to get on a more serious note here, like, hey, you love books. What are some of the most passionate things about? Why do you love storytelling itself? Why are we even here? Because we can super relate with you on that. We like to have fun, but getting into it of you love books so much. Why? Well, where'd that passion come from? How'd you get started in the first place? Was there something in your childhood? No, okay, I won't. Okay, going serious again. But why do you love books so much and made this channel in the first place?
Man, another softball. I mean, what an easy question. Man, that's, I mean, it's hard to get into and understand why. I mean, I think that some of us are just drawn to that kind of immersive thing. And I don't really know, because I mean, there was a time probably like after high school and when I first started college, when I wasn't reading and I was just kind of burnt out and I was watching more movies and everything. But there is, I think in general, the reason why people continue to read, why there are people who come to our channels to learn about books and to find recommendations, is because it feels like there is a deep shallowness to everything in our culture. Everything is so transient and empty. And, you know, we're on TikTok, we're on YouTube, we're on Twitter. It just all feels hollow. And to get something that someone can recommend to you, like a human being, and say, this is something that's an experience that you can immerse yourself in, and it's something only you can experience, because it's different for everyone. You know, you're like having a mixed mind meld with the author of the book, and you're able to have a hallucination that's completely unique to yourself. And that's why talking about books, I think, is so much more interesting on YouTube than talking about movies. Because while, yes, we can all have different opinions about the quality of movies, nobody is really having a different experience entirely. A movie's a movie, but a book, it's changeable. And sometimes you read a book when you're young, you read it again when you're older, and it's a completely different experience. So I don't know. I just, it's a type of storytelling I really love, and I'm passionate about writing. I love just doing it. And it's cool.
That was an amazing answer. That was, Jake, you're
I'm a little disappointed it didn't come from some like childhood deep trauma, right? Or something that, like, you know, books was your only
there.
Escape
it's
from.
It's there. It's just, it's too dark to even, it's too dark to get into.
That was a great answer. You're getting better at this already. I think we're trying our best here too, because we always try to balance that as well with, don't mean to like make you too uncomfortable with the questions here, but having that perspective from you, we really don't have there's tons of people in the space. Your channel, I've watched your channel before we started one.
Yeah.
So I was watching you because we started ours in 2022. I think I definitely started watching you before then, just knew of your channel. So the fact that we get to talk to you and kind of pick your brain of having a similar situation in just that, and not to be repetitive about the theme of, hey, we like to, like, we really love books, but also, hey, funny because we're just having a fun time. So to see that from somebody who does something similar to us, but way better than us, admittedly, you're doing a great job. And so I kind of want to see too, with the thing that I'm feeling, and Rich pointed out earlier, me being a cinephile, I'm that kind of movie watcher that will be like, man, that's a really good shot. Oh, look at that. I'm so bad with that. And
it does make me cringe trying to like watch a movie with him sometimes. Like,
I'm sorry.
The type that'll yell at you if you look at your phone for a second, or, you know, that sort of thing?
He gives you, to quote the Utes, he gives you bombastic side eye. You're looking at your phone.
You even say that, Jake? Like, yes. I don't say anything, but I'm like, all right, I'm not watching a movie with them a lot. You know, it's ruined an experience.
Their opinions are now moot.
Yeah. So to see that, and I see that in you, like when you have your Letterboxd account, I do too. Mine's anonymous though. I don't want, you know, I write some dirty stuff on there. I don't want people to see it, but
what movies are you reviewing?
what was the recent one you were just fawning
okay,
over?
It's not porn. Okay. It's an amazing,
it's pretty close.
Just a great defense already.
Have you seen Poor Things?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. You get what I mean? Like, there's a lot of nudity but it's amazing. What did you think about that film? Don't, without spoiling for anybody, what did you think?
I didn't like it at all.
Damn it.
Yeah, I know. There's your moment.
I was waiting. But you, yeah, okay. I'm sad that you didn't like that movie. But I, so seeing coming from.
You don't have all the same opinions as us.
Unbelievable.
Instantly, we can't even interact anymore.
Unsubscribe.
But seeing how, I could really get nerdy, geeky about all that stuff. And I often ask myself the question, I'm curious what you think, and Rich, what you think of this too, because we're all in this situation of looking at when you see a score for a movie, for a book, how much do you value the audience opinion versus the critic's opinion? How do you see it differently now that we're technically, would you consider yourself, Jake, a critic? Or again, you could not use that term, but just a different perspective now than you had before.
The easier perspective, would you put yourself on the critic side of Rotten Tomatoes or the audience side of Rotten Tomatoes?
I identify more as a critic simply because that's just, I'm a critical, mean person. But I do think that everyone's a critic. Once you put your voice and once you put your thoughts out there into the world, then you're like a critic, basically. I mean, these audience reviewers are just critics, but without the credentials or the ability to write, a verbose review. So I think that it's more that it's very political, the kind of audience reviews and critics reviews. There's kind of like a sense that the audience review has to be more like populist and more favoring like popcorn stuff. But in reality, I mean, the critics love that stuff too. So I don't know. I never pay attention to what the audience says, to be fair, because especially on Rotten Tomatoes, you get fanboys coming in there and just shitting all over everything. So
Rich, do you agree? Do you kind of identify as a critic?
Oh yeah. Reason I've, my whole catchphrase for this channel I started off beginning is democracy is cringe. Don't trust the peons, trust yourself. People are like, yes. Why do you say that? Why is democracy cringe? It's because I always hated it when people talked about like, what movies should we watch? And everyone's like trying to have their opinion and like, ultimately, no, just someone decide, make up your own mind. Just actually go forth and do it rather than thrust your own will to the will of the mob. Like, terrible.
To be honest, that's something I love about your guys' channel because there's so much, like, let me go on a rant here. There's so many YouTube channels, podcasts, or whatever that are dancing around the feelings of, the people who might like this thing or who might not. I'm like, well, I understand your perspective, all this. I love that you guys just came out against what is the garden?
Malazan,
Yeah. You guys were just like, screw that. We don't like it. And I was like, nobody's like, who does this? Especially at the size you guys are at. I'm like, you guys are incurring the wrath of quite a few people, I think. But it's so fresh to just get an honest opinion from someone and who's just like, we should be fielding those honest opinions. Like now I trust your guys' opinion more because I know what you guys actually think about something.
I honestly, one of the more prouder moments for channel overall is us doing a review on Nicholas Ames' book,
Kings of the Wild. That was great.
I liked it a bit more than Austin, but Austin's like, it's mid best. And we've had that on a thumbnail.
Yeah.
It's mid. Yeah. And Nicholas Ames DM'd us. It's like, hey, I want to come on the podcast. Like, hey, it'd be really great if we could do something together. And we had him on an interview, and it was like pretty soon after.
It was so fun.
It was such an odd position to be in of like telling the author to their face, yeah, I think your book is just okay. I didn't really like
it. It's a tough thing because that's a lot of reviewers over time will stop scoring things and will just because I especially understand it too. You know, Jake, I know you and Daniel Green have your beef back and forth, understandably. And so someone like that, it makes sense. He's starting to publish books now. And so I can understand the point of view of once you get to a certain level, because Sanderson, for example, won't go out and like bash other authors or books like that, because you get to a certain size in your platform. And if you talk negatively, like why would you do that to your essentially colleagues, to your peers?
It's a difference of he's like an author shitting on other authors in the industry is kind of like, why are you fighting your own team? That's kind of gross. Not a good thing to do. Versus critic is on the other side. So it's that weird transition. So which do you see yourself more as, a critic or an author?
Because maybe you said you love writing. Because if you transition from more critic to, hey, I'm now creating works, I'm now maybe publishing a book as well, would you then put you in the camp of, since I'm writing books, maybe I don't, you know, maybe I don't talk books in a certain light anymore?
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that because I...
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Like most of what I read these days is from like the 60s, you know? So I mean, I don't think Larry McMurtry, he's dead, but I don't think he'd care regardless what I have to say about, you know, Lonesome Dove. But with like new stuff today. For sure. What's that?
I just started that book today.
No way.
Yeah,
really?
I'm finishing it by this coming Saturday. I have a book club on it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. I love Larry McMurtry. I'm reading Texasville right now. I just finished The Last Picture Show. By the way, The Last Picture Show, so it's like a perfect book. It is so, so good still.
That's from Larry McMurtry?
Yeah.
Yeah, Larry McMurtry. It was turned into a movie in 1971. Awesome. Really great movie. And the book is like a template, perfect template for the movie. They're so similar. But yeah, fantastic. Anyways,
sorry to interrupt you.
No. I could go on about Larry McMurtry forever. I guess you can decide, who's that guy? Chris Stuckman, right? He's like making movies now. And a lot of people were upset because he's like, I'm not going to talk negatively about movies. And that has hurt his channel. You can see that it's hurt his channel because I look at his thumbnails, and when he has a movie thumbnail, I go, oh, he must've liked the movie. If he's reviewing it, you know, so that has an effect. But I think that because he's making that deliberate choice to be like, I'm separating myself out from this to be more on the creative end, totally valid, totally fair. It depends how far you want to go, how careful you want to be. Like, yeah, you don't want to be just trash talking people. But I also think just talking critically about other people's writing in a respectful way, I don't see how that could alienate you from the whole industry, you know, the whole writing industry. I don't think, as long as you're being respectful, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's the difference, is talking about the work itself and going like, hey, I didn't agree with this aspect. I think I was confused here. I think it could have been done better. If you're talking about the work, then hey, fair game. Maybe it's your opinion. It's fine. Goes that step further if you start trash talking, like, oh, this author is stupid, this, you know, pee pee poo poo head, like, ugh, gross. Then yeah, you're denigrating the your fellow colleague. There was the similar thing with, I mean, this is long, long ago. The guy, Terry Goodkind, he was making, you know, a very a very tasteless joke at Robert Jordan's expense at his health dealing with cancer.
Oh,
not It basically the whole context behind it is, Robert Jordan and Terry Goodkind were supposed to be at this convention together on a panel, and Jordan couldn't make it because he was dealing with cancer. Suddenly came up. He had to go through some different treatment. And Terry Goodkind jokes in like, well, hey, at least I can actually show up to one of these, unlike Jordan type deal. And yeah, soured me to the man after I like watched that video of like him saying that. Like, ugh. But he has a kind of reputation of being a poor sport in the author space, like denigrating other authors specifically, not their works, but the author, and also people who work in his industry, where he lambasted one of his artists that worked on his book. He hated one of the covers of his books, and on a Facebook post, it's like, oh yeah, some of the, this artist sucks. He's terrible. And he did my book. And the artist commented back saying, why didn't you say anything? Like, we worked together. If you didn't like it, you could have told me and we could have worked on it. Why are you just crapping on my work now? So,
just wasn't as respectful. Like, yeah. Very much disrespectful. I see what you mean. Because who do you hate, Jake?
Yeah.
Oh, let me give you a list. no, I think that's what you're talking about is so interesting, because I think about that a lot in terms of like, I think we like have this idea of the artist who's also an asshole, who's just like a terrible person, but their art is so good, so that it like elevates them and it creates this mystique. And I think there's a lot of people who make art today who have this in their mind to be like, I can behave however I want, you know, because this famous artist was an asshole at some point. And I think that those people who are so successful and gifted and create great art while being horrible people, I think those people are truly the exceptions. And if you're just looking at the exceptions to be like, oh, I can be a jerk, then that's no way to live your life. And I personally don't see art, creating art or anything. I don't think Ulysses is worth the lives of whoever, you know, like I just don't see it that way. And I think that it's good to look at, to not look at art above human lives and above being a good person, you know? So for Terry Goodkind, clearly that has an effect on his entire output, on how people look at him and remember him and his legacy for years and years and years. And compared to someone like, you know, Robert Jordan, who's was a generally kind person. So I think it has a huge effect.
Yeah.
Well, we actually recorded a video on it, and actually I think released recently, talk about separating the art from the artist. Where do you stand on that then? Do you separate, or is there sometimes where you just can't watch a movie by a terrible person, or you can't read a book if you know too much about the author?
It totally depends. I think, and I saw you guys posted that video and I started watching it the other day. I didn't finish it, but I was,
wow. I understand. You only got 30 seconds in. Completely get it.
I intend to finish it, but I saw like the Neil Gaiman. I was like, what are these guys up to? What the heck? But, I was curious, but I think that it's a really interesting topic, because it is one of those eternal gray areas that is just going to be, it's going to depend on whoever it is. You know, some people, Harry Potter is super important to them. They have memories of it since childhood, and they can separate J.K. Rowling from that series. You know, others can't, because they have a different experience in their lives, because they have to deal with hate every day, you know, so it's harder to separate that. And it just depends from person to person. I mean, I think that, you know, I love John Ford. I love John Ford Westerns. He clearly contributed to racist depictions of Native Americans in his movies for years and years. And although he dealt with that later in his career and tried to apologize for that with later movies he made, it doesn't add up and it doesn't make it okay. So because I love those movies, I grew up with those movies, I can still enjoy them, but I understand why some people can't and why they can't separate the art from the artist because it's so intrinsically involved. And it also just depends on what the heck this person is doing. You know, if they, I mean, there's a difference if they did a couple naughty things compared to something really bad, you know? So it's interesting to talk about because everyone has their limit and it's all based on like your personal sensibility, I think.
Do you think people should try? Like rather than like, I think pretty, really clear on the position that in some cases you just can't. Some people, it's an emotional reaction and fair enough, you can't really control it sometimes. But do you think people should try? That the effort should be made? Because I'm thinking to myself of, there's the standpoint of the art and the artist are intrinsically linked and that you should judge, you should really curtail what you own, what you partake in by what the other person does. Like the idea of constantly filtering through what you purchase and what you consume through how it affects others. And so you'll research an author that says, oh, that author has opinions I disagree with. I'm not going to support their work. Or this person has done terrible things, so I'm not going to support their work. Should people do that? Or should people try to separate the art from the artist?
Well, you bring up an interesting topic because that's also the commerce thing of like financially supporting someone. I think that it can be overblown in the case of like something like J.K. Rowling, Harry Potter. It's like there are things like you can do like, yeah, don't financially support abusive people, whatever. But also I think that trying to be morally responsible through your dollar, it's a very, it's just a unstable and very like silly thing to try to maintain throughout every single course of your life, every aspect of your life, you know, because we live in capitalism. We, our money goes to horrible, horrible stuff every day. And we have very little control over that most of the time. Yeah. We should try to limit the harm we do, but this is a whole other topic, but you know, it goes on and on and on. If we're talking about moral accountability with how we're spending our money, I think if in terms of like trying to appreciate art, if someone's like, hey, try to separate the art from the artist in order to appreciate the movie Annie Hall, because it's an important movie, it won Best Picture. It's a foundational movie and it's a super important. Try to do that. Does that mean you should watch Magic in the Moonlight and all of Woody Allen's late career, you know, every movie that Woody Allen ever made? Probably not, unless you really want to, you know? So it depends on like, what is it important for you? Are you going to gain enough value from that if you feel like you can emotionally wrestle with those things? So yeah, it's a messy thing. I think it's just going to be messy forever.
As a fellow cinephile, did you see the movie Tar?
No, I haven't yet.
Oh, Jay, you got to watch it. And the reason, I'm not spoiling the movie or anything, the reason it's such a great movie is it doesn't hand you like, this is the answer to the question. It just makes you think more. And I love movies like that just leave it ambiguous. Yeah. It's great. Yeah.
I saw a great comment on one of our videos that talking about that specifically. You gave out one of the quotes of base. Do you remember that quote?
I do remember it, but do you want to like get into the movie at all? Because I just want to spoil anything. No. Okay.
Not really.
Okay, but one of the quotes?
The quote and how we used it in context and the person's... So,
Context. Well, I can give the context of it is I don't want to spoil any, but all essentially the... You got Jake, you got to watch the film. You got to watch it. It's so good.
Even more bare level, I'll stay away from spoilers. Yeah. He said a quote that basically talked about how it is like small-minded.
The narcissism of small differences can lead to the most boring conformity, essentially. That was the quote that one of the characters makes, and it's an interesting point, and it's this character isn't the most moral person, essentially. So
we agreed with the quote, but the end of the the end of the movie kind of turns that on its head of the commenter saying, like, that's quite literally, it's the opposite message the movie was going for. He was taking that quote from the beginning of the movie and showing like, well, haha, look at how it's turned out. And so us using the quote is kind of silly. The person comments is like, oh, that's really silly because you clearly didn't get the point of the film.
Which my response to that would be like, I think the movie Tar, what's so great about it is you can take both, like the person that watched the film on their end and was going, this is how I took the message of the film. Whereas I took the message of the film to mean both. So I think it's more nuanced than that. But yes, it was a great, because that movie will spark such a long conversation. But I don't want to go too much into a movie people haven't seen or you haven't even seen. But it, yeah, I read that comment too. It was great. So, but Jake, on this whole separating art versus the artist, this topic is like, we could do several, we've done two videos about it already. It's one of those that's going to be timeless. And we could pick your brain on it all day. But Jake, let's just ask you more controversial things. Like, what do you think about the current economic political state of the world right now? Like, what? I don't know.
All right, Jake.
I think it's great. it's all great. All uphill.
Yeah, my 401k is just going up. Nothing wrong here.
Well, Jake, we
have a 401k? Damn.
Oh. You have one of those?
I know.
But that looping us back to something we were touching on a little bit earlier with audience versus critic, then we were kind of getting into the sphere of when you become a creator yourself. If you start to write a book, or can you start, you know, being respectful to fellow authors? And that should be the case for however big or small you are, even if you're just a random person. Just being respectful is a good thing to do. So when we're differentiating between a critic or an audience member, now that you define yourself more as a critic, do you see different pros and cons or values to a critic versus just a regular audience member who's there to just enjoy things? Is there something a critic can obviously provide, but also a con to it? And just to maybe toss one out there to discuss, as critics, you know, we start to look more into things. Is it kind of an ignorance is bliss thing where the more we think about it, like, it's good, media literacy, all that, great, but when we're thinking about so much, have so many things to compare to, is it almost less enjoyable at times? Do you find yourself, because you're so into it, being like, are you overthinking ever? Do you feel when you're reviewing books or looking at your hobby?
I don't know if I overthink it, but I do wonder if, because I've experienced a lot more art now than I had when I was like 15, if the effect is blunted, just because I'm more aware of the tricks and the skill and all that goes in behind a movie or a book or whatever. You know, I'm more aware of how the author is transitioning between scenes and the language they're using and what's working and what's not working, if the voices are good, you know. So I think that it can ruin the enjoyment for sure, because that's life. I mean, the more you experience life, the less new and exciting and fun it is.
That next high.
Yeah.
I mean, sadly, I mean, I know we're all old men now, but, you know, when you first, like, I think most people's favorite movies are the favorite movies they had when they were 15, because that was, it just overwhelms you. Something amazing hits you when you're at that age and you can't really experience that again, because you're experiencing like the magic of a new art form, really, in ways that hasn't been explored. So I think while tastes change and all of that, I think that you're kind of what was the question?
With critics, essentially, if we're
overthink things where you realize like, other people could enjoy this, but for some reason, I'm just overthinking it and it's taking away the joy that I could be having.
Yeah. But I don't think it's so much overthinking as it is like, I've seen this type of movie before. I've seen this type of book before and I've seen it done better. So of course, like, yeah, if you want to watch, you know, this movie, the diet version of a really great, if you want to watch the diet version of Citizen Kane, have fun. But I've seen Citizen Kane. I know what's good. So, no, you can quote me on that. I've seen Citizen Kane, you know, just so people know I'm smart. But once you've had the good stuff, you don't really want to have the bad stuff anymore.
Well, that's where a lot of the negative sentiment against critics is, where you know, critics are lambasting a movie saying, oh, it's terrible. And then, you know, the big populace is like, what do you got? You guys are crazy. You guys are elitist. It was super fun. Really enjoyed it. Is that just mainly because people who haven't seen a bunch of stuff and like, it's new to them, and so they enjoy it, versus a critic seen all those tricks before and it's like, eh. nothing new, nothing special.
It might sound a little elitist, but yeah, I really think critics just, if that's your job to watch a million movies a year, you're going to know more about what makes a really good movie work for the most part. You might, just because of that, you might be more jaded to a point where you can't really enjoy it on just like a any like simple level, on any pleasurable way. Like you just can't derive pleasure from it anymore. And that kind of sucks. And that's where I think getting opinions from other people is really good, from just people who aren't critics, is really good too. You know, there's movies I love that critics don't. I love Peter Jackson's King Kong. It's one of my favorite movies.
No way.
I love it. And I don't think it's critically beloved in any way, but I think that because I saw it at the time when I saw it, it was important to me, and it still has that magic. And I'm able to appreciate the things in it because I came to it originally from a more innocent perspective.
I will say that that is, you mentioned that in one of your previous videos, and I identified so hard with Pirates of the Caribbean 3. World's End. Correct opinion. It's great. I think it's a great movie.
That whole trilogy is
underrated. Fantastic. Underrated trilogy.
It is. It's really good.
We were spoiled.
Do you have any opposite things where people, movies or books people love and are so acclaimed that you go, that's not good?
Yeah, you know, Poor Things.
If I could rip another one, I would.
There's stuff all the time that
I'm sure. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I didn't love Everything Everywhere All at Once.
The
1-2 punch to him.
You know, that's my second favorite movie ever. Oh no.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you can unfollow me on Letterboxd now.
Absolutely. Actually, you had a video that I love so much that you made on Everything Ever All at Once. It was you talking about how, or making fun of how when a movie first comes out and the first group of people find this awesome movie, it was a small subsect of people. Rich and I saw the movie like in theaters early on.
I think it was either the day of release or the day after.
It was soon. And we were like, holy crap, this movie's amazing. And well, I was more so saying that you liked it.
I liked it.
You liked it.
It was good.
I loved this film. I was one of those going like, the masses need to see this. And then it becomes more popular. And the video you made was making fun of the fact that it gets super popular and then it becomes too edgy. You become edgier and a lot of people start hating it because, oh, it's popular. Now it's so big. The movie's kind of bad. But then it starts to win the Oscar and people are like, it's this back and forth where you see how public opinion can shift on something that becomes popular because, oh, this is the thing everyone's raving about. It's not that good. And I know you don't like Everything or All What's, but that video you made, what really inspired that? Or do you kind of see, you're making an observation about how people view anything that's popular, where do you think people latch on to trying to make fun of things that are just more popular? That whole skit, where'd that come from? Or what's your thoughts on that?
Well, first off, good memory on that. You remember that video more than I even do, I think.
Love the movie. I had to remember it.
I think honestly what came out of that was I was kind of contending with my reaction to the movie and why I didn't like it that much. And I was thinking about, and I truly believe this, I think we undervalue, when we critically evaluate something, we undervalue our predetermined, like our expectations when we go in. If we think... Yeah. If we're told it's an amazing movie and it isn't, that's going to have a huge effect on how we receive it. Even if we went in with blind, like you guys went in early on when the movie wasn't a smash sensation. Yeah. I saw it when it was huge and everyone was talking about it and people were like, it's the best movie ever made. So of course I'm rolling my eyes going into this movie. I'm like, all right, let's see the best movie ever made. That has an effect on me. When I may have just seen it early on and been like, yeah, it's not my thing. But it's pretty good. Like, it's well made and I liked it. But now after seeing it, I can't help the gut reaction I have going like, this movie, what the hell? I don't get it. You know, so like that.
You don't understand a mother's love, Jake? You can't understand that?
No.
But that's a great point with expectations, though. That is a great point because That's exactly it. Kind of talking about how critics versus audience, if you go in with more knowledge, you're going in with expectations of everybody loves this film. Supposedly I'm supposed to love this. So maybe the movie wasn't as bad as you went thinking on. And the reverse can happen too. Movies being absolutely shamed and everyone hates it. Book, everybody hates it. You read it and go, this is great experience for us. Grace of Kings, for example, is like, for some reason, people think Grace of Kings is like real bad and gets a lot of, at least Goodreads and stuff, just has really low scores. Read it. Really
loved
good.
It. Yeah. It was
great, really great. What are your thoughts on that book before we, we're trying to relate to you, Jake. Let's get on the same page with something. Like, have you read Grace of Kings by chance?
I haven't, but it reminded me of something different. It reminded me of reading Eye of the World, because anyone you talk to in the Wheel of Time fandom, they're like, that first book sucks. It's not good. Just like, keep your expectations really low. So that when I read it, I was like, this is great. I was like, this is a really nice fantasy novel. I had a great time, you know?
Good example. Yeah, because that, even you would say, Rich, as you love Wheel of Time, you'd say similarly.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but I didn't love it. It was enough to get me to read the next book, and then I absolutely fell in love with book two, and that's what carried me through. But yeah, I tried to set your expectations low, and apparently I didn't set them low enough for you.
No. I was going with low expectations. That's another thing. When you go in with low expectations and it undercuts it more, or you go in with high expectations and it exceeds it, that's where a lot of love can come from, or a lot of hate for something.
Expectations is one of the most important things going into a movie or book, because I'm reminded of a great example of, did you ever see the movie? It was about the Viking guy. It was the revenge story, but not
the Northman.
Revenge. The Northman. Did you ever see that movie?
No, but I heard about it.
Basically, we completely disagree on it, and it's, I think, almost exclusively on expectations. Of, we go in, we both think, oh, this is a Viking revenge story, and we're going into it. That's what we're expecting. About 10 minutes into the movie, I immediately drop that expectation. It's like, oh, no, that's not what this is. This is not a revenge story. And so I no longer expected it. And I was like, okay, this is more of a weird Viking story, like tale around a fire, mysticism. It's funky. It's one of those movies. You were still expecting a revenge story. And on that front, it didn't do so well. It's been done better. It's kind of a lame revenge story if you judge it on that front. So you didn't like it. You hated it.
Yeah.
Where I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely, because my expectations were different. Yeah, definitely. Because when we're coming into, even going into, we're giving a lot of movie examples too.
Yeah, we're supposed to be book channel. There's all the books.
But Jake, I think we plugged your Letterbox more than your book channel at this point. And
I think your Letterbox needs... It needs the boost.
No, it doesn't. After hearing a couple, I liked your Letterbox on, because I looked by your 5 stars, but I didn't look at your lower stars. So that's I'm starting to find out a lot where we disagree. This is not good.
Uh-oh.
That's great. Yeah, now you just got to go on all the 1 stars, and then you'll have me back on. It'll be a very different podcast.
Our expectations will be different.
Yes.
Do you use any type of Goodreads or Storygraph? Do you have any book star system that you do?
No, I don't. I'd keep it in my notes app. And I mean, I review basically everything I read when I do like my quarterly book review videos or whatever. But yeah, I just read very eclectically, and I read like randomly, you know. I'm reading probably like 5 books right now, halfway through. I'll probably finish one of them. I have a very chaotic, It's all impulse.
Well, like the 5, and you might like only finish one, meaning the other ones you'll DNF, or how's that work? You're reading 5 at the same time right now?
Yeah, yeah. Just sitting around the house, and I'm just, based on what I feel like reading, I'm just like, yeah, I'll pick that up. And I mean, I'm reading Texasville. I'm reading a book on the Civil War. I just started the Lyndon Johnson, Robert Caro biography. I'm still trying to get through In Search of Lost Time. I'm still reading a Ross McDonald mystery. I'm reading an Elmore Leonard book. Oh my God, I have a lot.
That's more than 5.
No, there's a lot on pause, a lot on hold, but it's just like, I can't just force myself to go through a book. So a lot of times I just start something, finish it later, and it's just all up in the air. Yeah.
Your mind is chaos. That's insane.
This explains a lot. I mean, I really wanted to more end with this kind of... We said we'd dive into your mind, and we didn't do enough of that, Rich.
No, we didn't.
Just scratching the surface.
Only the surface. Rich, do you want me to get into that, or did you want to ask him the question?
You go ahead.
You sure?
You can take this one.
Okay, Jake, when it comes down to it, we're talking this podcast, we're kind of getting a little... I can't take you seriously. I can't do it. So actually, this is part
he uses humor to hide behind the humor.
That has to do with the question, Jake, of I feel like at times I can use humor to hide my passions, or I can use humor to sometimes navigate life in a way that makes it less confrontational. You know, we could get more into, like, Rich and I, we can bicker. We do. But you can use humor to make it's a tool in a way to just make things make life less miserable in a good way. Do you feel that you ever use humor in a way to, as a shield for something, as an emotional, just being a therapist for a second here, do you think that you use your humor in a way to help you navigate in life?
Yes.
In that way, because sometimes I can get talking emotional about something and be like, you know what? Humor is a better way to do this. So if someone starts attacking you for your true, genuine opinion, or you're going like, this is what I think, this is the thing, humor is a good way to just like, hey, it's a joke too. It's kind of an aside you can use in a way. Just kind of talking about, we are humorful in here. Did you have a point on that, Rich? You were going to go
to niche down. It's one of the nice things in putting out a comedy video on YouTube, and where we're joking a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
Ultimately, we're to some degree hiding our opinions. It hides the sting. Like, you try and go, I disagree. You say, well, hey, it's a joke. It's fine. We're just jokesters here. Don't take us too seriously. But then when I try and say something serious, like, well, hey, look at the funny man trying to make a point. Rather than...
Yeah, absolutely. Comedy is cowardly on every front.
It is.
I hate this whole thing where journalists are like, comedians are so brave, you know, and they're speaking the truth. It's like, comedy is cowardly. You're couching what you could say in a very direct manner in a silly way. And it doesn't, you know, it just blunts its effect. And I think, I mean, as evidence, my whole channel is evidence of that. You know, I started out making, you know, serious videos just talking about books and doing that, and just I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand hearing my own voice talking about it for whatever reason. And now I couch every opinion I have about any culture stuff going on, anything around the world. I can put it out as a comedy video, and some people will get what I'm saying. Some people will go, what does he actually think about this? And that's what I want. I love the ambiguity. No one gets mad at me.
You do a great job.
To hide your extreme love for, you know, Peter Jackson King Kong movie, instead of making a video essay defending, like having to put your opinion on the line and defend that movie, you make a funny joke video that, like, you're defending the movie, but it's a joke. And so, yeah, you don't have
That's
to stand
so true.
It.
Just like Everything Everywhere All at Once, instead of saying, I hate this movie, I'm just like, look at this guy who hates the movie.
That is what you essentially did in the video. Yeah. So I think we could relate in a way too, because we like to talk deep, but then again, humor is a good tool in a way, because obviously it's more enjoyable too. You're having fun with your friends. Not to make humor just a bad thing.
Ultimate, at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're talking about fantasy books.
Yeah.
I don't think it should be a really dour subject where we have to get like deep and serious the entire time. Like, ultimately, it's a fantasy fiction novel. It should be an enjoyable time rather than something you have to sit through and learn and knowledge and gain something out of it. Yeah.
Which comes back to, again, taking yourself too seriously or not. Of Jake, I think what we've learned here today is just about nothing.
Yeah. Ultimately, there's plenty of ways to waste an hour. And people that are listening to this now, you chose to waste it listening to us.
Jake, that's
a choice.
Do you want to leave them with anything at all? Obviously, go check out Man Carrying Thing on YouTube. You guys already know him. He's a great channel. And get his merch. My merch is coming in from his merch. I promise I bought it. It's just he has some shipping issues on his side. That's his. I bought it today. So. But do you want to leave off with anything? And sorry to make you sit through such a long podcast.
I love the merch plug. I love, you know, any podcast that ends with giving me money, you know, that's great. I would love to end this podcast with a wholehearted recommendation.
Ooh.
For Daniel Green, great booktuber, really good, you know, fantasy stuff. These guys are fine too. But yeah, no, I had so much fun. Thanks for having me on here. I genuinely do enjoy the podcast. You guys are doing really good stuff, and it's very exciting in the whole fantasy book. I think you guys are really fresh, doing really interesting stuff, so continue to do that. And yeah, read books, everyone. Just do it.
Oh man, thank you so much, Rich.
Yep, everyone read books so you can get all the references that Jake makes on his videos.
And movies, lots of movies talk, so
both. Just consume all the content. Don't live your life. Don't try and get a family or anything. Just consume product.
From my experience, yes, from my own experience, family will just keep you from playing more video games, and it sucks. Just
trust me. I think it would be funnier if we say to our editor, Nick, like this whole podcast, we're at like an hour, 10, whatever it's coming up on, and the video we put out was like 30 seconds long. That would be like, what if this never airs? Who knows? We'll see. If you're watching this episode, we didn't go with that idea. Jake, had a great time. Thank you so much for even doing this. This is super cool for us. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, bye, everybody. Having. See you next bye, episode. Everyone.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.